All right. I'm in the home of Robert Bailey, and today I think is December the, 10th? 1992, and Robert and I are working on our second interview since the first one didn't turn out right because of the recorder. All right, you've sort of got in mind what you want to talk about, so you just want to start, Robert?
Okay, one thing I'd like to talk about, the history of the Bailey family, which will lead up to a point I'm trying to get to with Bailey Enterprises.
All right, and let's start out by saying what is Bailey Enterprises.
Okay, Bailey Enterprises is a music business that has several things involved in it. It has a publishing company, and we're going to have a small record label, and we're going to do various things. I have a folder over there on it. We can go over that folder if you would like.
Mm-hmm.
To go over it.
Okay. Well, if you want me to, I can include it in the I mean, if you want me to take one, I can include it when I turn in the material. That's what I was thinking.
Well, I don't think I.
Or if you don't have.
I have an excellent.
Okay, that's fine.
I'll show you some of the things that are in this.
Okay. Now, when you say we, who else is involved in your enterprise?
Well, me and my wife. And my father and my brother in Eastern Kentucky is working in it right now also.
So it's a family endeavor.
Uh-huh. This is what I put together. This is a brief outline of what Bailey Enterprises is. And if you would like, you could ask me questions from what that says or whatever to put on this, and I can make you copies and possibly send them to you.
Well, what I think we should do is, why don't we make copies of this and let me include it in here, rather than us spending a lot of time going over each component of this.
Okay.
You can just basically summarize what this is, because I'm interested in your family history, whether you come from a family of musicians, how you got into this.
Okay.
And what are the things that got you involved in the music? What are the things that have made you grow with it?
Okay.
Looks like you all have spent a lot of time on this. This is great. So would you have your enterprise here in this county?
Yes.
Is this what you were talking about a while ago, speaking
to
Dudley?
And there's also part of it in Harlan County. This is the whole plan right here. Actually, it's to pull music from every direction. Which mm-hmm. you will see here in Nashville, and which is on the other side of Bowling Green.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of country is there, and Thumb Style from Central City, Kentucky.
Yes.
Bardstown, you have stuff like the Stephen Foster story and
mm-hmm.
stuff like that. Your blues come from Henderson.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Owensboro, bluegrass music.
Right.
IBMA, mountain music. Which is hillbilly, some form. Some people call it bluegrass. I call it folk and hillbilly music.
Sure.
Okay, and of course it will be drawn to the home of which is Ohio County.
Mm-hmm.
Was considered the birthplace of bluegrass music.
Right.
That's the whole ideal. That's the area outlook for this area.
Well, I think this is a good plan, especially because the western part of the state hasn't really been covered that much in music.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about Mose Rager, Arnold Schultz, Kennedy Jones,
mm-hmm.
Ken Vandiver, Clarence Wilson and them, Mr. Fought, you know, you've got a whole seedbed of people who were extremely talented.
Well, see, there's music
this
all
good.
Around this area. We're right in the center of it.
That's true, we are.
And in Kentucky, we're right in the center of it. Basically, the outline I just explained to you has it all around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all different types is around you. And of course, as a publishing company, we will be taking material from out of state also, and possibly from some other countries.
I see you've got gospel.
Yes, of course, in Kentucky, gospel music comes from all areas.
I was wondering, when I saw gospel, were you including gospel in here? In my mind, I had gospel as being
yes.
in there.
That's why I didn't put it in any certain spot. You see, gospel music mm-hmm. is known all over Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
I know several different styles of gospel.
Robert, have you read the history of the singing schools and all those things?
No, I sure haven't.
Well, I have a couple of, I have a book, it's called Singing Down the Glory. And Lynn Montell, who was on the documentary, conducted a 5-year study of gospel music in the western part of the state. And it sort of gives a general overview of the whole history of the singing conventions
uh-huh.
and gospel music. And I'll let you borrow it if you'd like.
Okay.
I think it would really, it would help you, I think, as you're thinking about pulling it all together.
Okay, would there be anything else you would like to ask me about that right there?
Well, not at this point, because the purpose of the oral history is not to elaborate on this at this point.
Okay.
But what I would like to do is get a copy of it, and when I turn in the material, I could turn it in that way. Whoever would come to look at this material would see this and know it exists and might use you as a resource. It would be really good for you in that way. Is that all right with you?
That's fine with me.
I think you're off to a good start with it.
And I have, maybe I shouldn't go into this, but I have sent a song to the state.
Great.
And
let's see, they have got
it on file.
All right. Now, when you say you sent a song to the state, let's talk about that a little bit. What does that mean?
Okay.
Pretend like I'm a blank wall here.
To different people involved with the state, such as Brereton Jones and Senator Ford, and Department of Transportation or Tourism, and of course Travel Development
mm-hmm.
was where it ended up. And what I was hoping that possibly this song could be used as a park song or something. I think we went over this song on the last interview. And we just got started on it. And I was hoping maybe to get this girl right here to sing it.
Oh, Alma, I know her.
If possible.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that she could do quite well. She's got a great voice.
Oh, she does.
My voice isn't that good, but it's a good song for Kentucky.
Is it a song about Kentucky?
Yes, it is.
And you wrote the whole thing?
Sure is.
Words and music?
Yes.
And where did you record it?
I recorded it here.
I see. And you recorded the copy you sent to the state?
Yes. Which I sent them just a copy of the words.
Oh, I see. You didn't send them the music.
No, I didn't send them the music. The music could be done the way I do it, in a folk or hillbilly fashion,
mm-hmm.
or it could be done in another way, like she might would do it in classical. It could be done as an anthem-like song. A bicentennial song was what it was meant for, but they already had a bicentennial song.
Mm-hmm.
So then I come up with the idea it might could be used for a park song.
Well, that's a good idea, because they are trying to revitalize the park systems here.
Well, it really tells a lot about Kentucky. And
didn't you sing it? Did you sing it for me?
Yes, I think I did. And
my mind is going back now. I think I remember that.
I may even have a copy of it here in my catalog, in fact. If you would like to take just a minute to look at
it. Sure. I'll say this too, Robert. If you ever get to where you need somebody to edit business letters for you, if you'll call me, I'll do it for you.
Okay.
You may not need it, but I like to edit. Oh, I remember you saying this. I think Alma's voice would work real well. I think you're right on that.
With classical touch, I think it would sound really good,
mm-hmm.
too.
It would.
It could be used as an anthem type song for a park system or
mm-hmm.
something. this is kind of what Robert Bailey is about in the music you see.
When you copy things, or if you let me borrow them, I could take them to Greg Hill's office and copy them. When you don't, you know, I'd like to have a copy of your preface, as well as a copy of the song words.
It's not very well put together. It's just my own words, really, I feel. What I mean, it's not put together probably in what some people would call proper language.
Proper format.
Yeah, it's.
Well, I like it because it's you.
Yeah, it's me. It's a country boy from the mountains. Mm-hmm. Basically, what it amounts to.
Now on there, it shows that you were born in Shelby County. Oh, Shelby, was it Shelby, Ohio?
No, I was born in Dayton, Ohio. My wife.
Dayton, Ohio.
My wife. My mother's name is Shelby.
Shelby. Okay.
Yes.
I saw the Shelby and got mixed up in my mind. Now let's see. Okay. Well, all right. Do you want to start? Where do you want? Is there a place you want to start with family? Or do you want me to just start out with your birth and then go back to your parents? Or do you want to start with your parents? How do you want to do it?
Or how you want to do it?
Well, I want to know all about your background here, so.
Okay. I would like to go over the history. Of course, I showed you a while ago. The Bailey family is pretty proud of their heritage. That's one of the main reasons why Bailey Enterprises is around.
Now, let me ask you a question. It's obvious that you all are very proud of your heritage.
Yes.
Now, do you consider that a Harlan trait? Is it true of the Harlan community, or is it more of a Bailey trait?
It's more of the Baileys. See, this is Irish Bailey crest right there. And
Irish.
The Baileys has, I think, two or three crests, and one of them ended up on the front of one of my tapes. And it's a touch of heritage. We come to the United States from Ireland. And this, Bailey's are known for music and, of course, whiskey.
Oh, that's Irish.
Yeah. And this, they're talking about Bailey's Tavern.
Pardon me. It got me.
But Baileys are very proud people, and that was one of the things that encouraged me to form Bailey Enterprises.
Well, now when you're going to talk about your history, are you going to tell where or when they came over from Ireland, or about when they did?
No, I don't think I have that.
Well, do you have any idea about when they came over? Like, was it during the potato famine, middle 1800s, or?
I'm not really sure. I haven't went back that far yet.
I just got back to
when they came into the Kentucky area, which is in 1892, I think, was when we was first traced into Harlan County and Virginia area.
Okay, now.
It says 1892, maybe a little earlier because it's got 1890 down here.
Well, now, is this from like a genealogical survey book or something?
Yes.
This is not from your family history, oral history, that your father's grandfather passed down?
No, this is some stuff we dug up, or my uncle had dug up about the family and everything.
Okay, now, I'm not discrediting it, and I want you to tell me about it, but when you're telling me, I wish you would, if you can remember, if it came down through the family, say this came down through the family.
Okay, basically what you want to know is what's going on since I've been around, right?
No. Well, yes, I want that too, but what I'm trying to say is, in my mind, as a researcher of oral history, there can be a big difference in what you find in a genealogical survey about your family and in what your great-grandfather said about your family.
Okay.
And so when you're telling me these things, if it's coming from the research, let's say this is a result of research, or if you're telling me another story that maybe came down to your dad from his grandfather, say this came down through the family.
Okay.
Because sometimes, not always, but sometimes there's a big difference In my family, there's a huge difference.
Okay, what's come down through our family? I've been hearing things about Bailey's playing music, the biggest part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I seen my grandpa make a mandolin. I seen the mandolin he made. I've seen him play several instruments, jew's harps also, and various things. We used to sit around him, and he'd be sitting in a chair, and all of us would be sitting around playing music.
Now, when he was doing this, where was he making his instrument?
Okay, this was in Virginia. It would be Lee County, Virginia, Pennington Gap.
And was he in a workshop?
A lot of it was hand-carved.
Well, was he in a workshop? Did he have a workshop, or was he on the porch or in the kitchen?
Well, various places through the house.
Neat.
You'd be sitting out on the porch whittling on the neck of an instrument he'd be working on, or sitting out in the back, you know.
Did he have the pattern in his head?
Yes.
He didn't have any kit that he was putting together?
You didn't see him sit down with the blueprint. Most of it was original put together.
Great. He's a true...
Mm-hmm. True. And he'd sit there and listen for the tone. A lot of it was right there.
Hmm.
A lot of our people play by ear.
Now, when you say he listened to the tone, does that mean when he was making the instrument, he could hear the tone before he got it finished, or he had a tone in mind he was trying to make the instrument sound like? What do you mean?
Okay, basically, he knew what good instruments sounded like,
mm-hmm.
fine instruments. And, of course, most people tune by different things, such as tuning forks and various things, pitch pipes and what have you. My grandfather, I guess you might say he had a great deal of what some people would call perfect pitch.
Oh, lucky.
You know,
mm-hmm.
and he, of course, you have to tune instruments. Well, you don't have to, but most people like it to standard tuning. And he knew what that would sound like. And this picture that I'm showing you of him, in fact, right to present, that is him right there. He was also known for dressing. He was a dresser, which during that period of time, that was fancy.
He looked stylish.
For that period of time, he was. The one you're seeing here is my Uncle Harley, which was a musician. My Uncle Herb, he could play. And my father is the youngest one. He also played a little bit. And my grandmother, she played banjo at a great deal of barn dances and stuff.
Now, was she Irish too?
I'm not really sure where her heritage come from. Right here is her great-great-grandfather. That's John Shell. Of course, he had a great deal of heritage in the Harlan County area. And he was considered one of the oldest men in Kentucky.
Now, were you from the Big Sandy area? Is this all part of Harlan County? I'm not that familiar with the terrain.
Okay, Harlan County, it's split in different areas.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're talking about Greasy Creek there in that article. Greasy Creek, it was told through the family that my great-great-great-grandfather there, named Greasy Creek, he shot a bear and it fell in the creek. And he named the creek, and it still to this day is called Greasy Creek.
I wonder if he was playing a fiddle somewhere along there.
And he was a rifle maker.
Oh.
This fella right here was a rifle maker. And he also fit in Civil War. And he did some things, I think it says on this article, something about he did some things with Daniel Boone and
mm-hmm.
various ones of the earlier frontier. And he was a respected man. And the Huffs, which was her family, this instrument I'm showing you, that was my grandfather's, or not my grandmother's, uncle that made that
dairy. Is dulcimer?
Yeah. And he made various types of instruments.
Now, did he make these as your father did out of his head?
My grandfather.
I mean, your grandfather.
I think so. From what my father told me, which he called him, is either her uncle or her brother one. His name is Martin Huff, and my father called him Uncle Martin. I don't know if it's his great uncle or my grandmother's brother. I haven't had the chance to meet him. I did run down one of his dulcimers while I was in Harlan County, though. And that was one of the first dulcimers he made. Mm-hmm. And he used to sit there at the courthouse and sell his instruments. And still to this day, he makes instruments.
How much did he sell it for, I wonder?
I'm not really sure. I know then people wouldn't turn loose of it. They wouldn't sell it. And I'll move on to the halls because I know you're short on time. The halls, which was on my mother's side, my grandfather, his mother was a Hall, which I heard through the family, down through the family, through my mother and various people, my father and cousins and what have you, that we're related to Tom T. Hall through my grandfather. And that is through the family. I have no documented proof of it, but that is through the family. And me and Tom has talked about it before. In fact, he signed various things for me here. And we've talked about music and everything. And Tom, of course, is known for his music also. And the Bushes were kind of a headstrong people. And I think one or two of them played also. I vaguely remember them, though, you know.
Now we're playing, we're talking stringed instruments.
String instruments, yes. But I vaguely remember that. I was really young.
Did these people sing as they played, or were they mainly playing?
Yes, especially on the Bailey side, they sang, and which some of us ain't that good as singers, you know. And a lot of my uncles on the Bailey side, too, like to play. But, you know, some of them like to sing, too. But the playing, I guess, outweighed the singing more, really, if that's what you're asking.
Well, I just wondered because I've noticed on this project, some people played all the time and never sang a word. There are other people who couldn't play anything, but they sang a lot. And so I was just wondering where they fell within those two extremes.
Well, in the Bailey family, a lot of us are experimental with music, for one thing. That's what makes us different.
And when you're saying experimental, are you meaning creative,
like
innovative?
Different. Yes.
Add your own touch?
Like to be different. Add a different flavor. I guess the one that I learned from the most was one of my uncles, and his name was Clark Bailey. And he had a... he had worked in the studio with various people. He had worked with the Coasters before and various people in the earlier groups. And he could play various instruments and guitar, electric, acoustic guitars, and he also played steel guitar. He still does that to this day. And I guess I learned the most from him, and he can sit down and you can start playing something, and he'll start putting a melody right to your harmony, just sitting there watching you, you know, and it's just right there. He's really, really a great guitar player.
Now, you were born in Ohio, right?
Yes, I was born in Ohio.
Now, when you were in Ohio, and you told me this before, but I don't remember it enough, you were born there, and did you all went back and forth for a while? Or did you move back into Harlan
as a child? What happened there course in Kentucky, work wasn't going that strong.
Sure.
At the time, during the late 50s. In eastern part of Kentucky, it wasn't anyway. So my father and mother moved to Dayton, Ohio. And they worked up there, and that was where I was born. And that was in 1959. Okay, from as long back as I can remember, I never did take to Ohio. I always wanted to run back and see my grandfather on my mother's side. And his name was Coy Bush. And he was a very strong Union man. And I think I told you about that before. And I spent a great deal of time running back to Eastern Kentucky every chance I got. On weekends, spring break, summer breaks, I'd come down here and spend, and everything until we moved back to Kentucky.
So how old were you when you all moved back?
Well, we moved back approximately, I'd say, from 10 to 11 years old, something like that, when we moved back permanent.
Mm-hmm. And you were back in the Harlan area when you moved back permanently. But up until then, as a child at home, when you were back in Ohio, were you exposed to music there, or was it only when you came back to Kentucky?
Yes, I was.
All right, and what was happening in Ohio that gave you some musical
Through being around the people in Kentucky, which was the Baileys most of the time, I had picked up on guitar from my uncles and my grandfather and different people I'd seen playing music. I'd picked up rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I go to Ohio and I start playing like most kids do, a recorder, which is a wind instrument.
Oh, yes. I played one, too, I think.
And then I ended up, also had a drum set and guitar that I played a lot. And then I went on to trumpet, and then back to the mountains, of course, back to guitar.
Okay, now, when you were playing the flutophone or whatever they call that little instrument, at that time, were you reading music?
I was learning.
You were learning. All right. Then when you went to the trumpet, were you reading music?
I was learning.
And but prior to that, when you had your guitar, now were you doing that by ear?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Sure was.
And then, so you do have ability to read music as well as...
Here recently in the past year, I had got back into it some.
Into reading music?
But reading music never did really amuse me, you might say. I had a lot... I guess it was in family. I had a lot to, how do I want to put this? I wanted the tone, you might say. I wanted the tone more than I did the reading. And I played by ear for many years.
Since you can do both, do you think if you read music, it makes your playing choppier? Does it flow better if you're going
really
with what's in your head?
I really think by ear is better. And that will get on to, I will get off the history here. I know you're running on limited time.
Well, we can just kind of mix it all around. I'm not trying to.
The Cornett family, which was my grandmother on my mom's side, her family was also into instruments, and they also made dulcimers and stuff. I got an article in the Harlan County Man down there at Cornett. He's probably related to me too. And they also was into instruments.
Mm-hmm.
And the music really started in the mountains as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, there's this love for Kentucky that I probably will never get rid of till the day I die. It's just there, it's a touch of heritage. I guess you might say what you've seen in Heritage Magazine here come out of Harlan County paper. It's just something that will always be with me, you know. And just music, I just love music.
It's part of your genetic makeup, it sounds to me like.
Really, and I've been around it all of my life. Mm-hmm. And I have that touch of pride that comes with the Baileys. And the stubbornness, you might say, it comes with the bushes that make me want to do it. And the pitch that comes with the Halls and the Cornets. And of course, Mr. Shell, he was a very determined man. And the Huffs, they were involved with the instruments. Just about all my family were involved with the instruments and music. And I guess it's just stuck in me. And this brings us up to a point in my life where when I came back to Harlan County, I got involved in various types of music. And my family was strictly country and hillbilly music, of course. And during this time, I had got to the age to where all as teenagers have a tendency to rebel when you're told that you are going to do something. Well, apparently, it seems like I remember a few of them telling me that I was going to play country music. And me and a cousin or two of mine decided we was going to play rock. And I went into the rock field, and this was during the early 70s. And one of the greater guitarists, I still consider him a great guitarist to this day, Ted Nugent, was one of the people that I got my rock influence from. Mm-hmm. And I played various styles from different ones. And I played other people's music for probably about 20 years. And I eventually got to where I was sick of it, playing other people's music. Playing in bands, I'd play the music, like I was saying, rock, REO Speedwagon, Aerosmith, Ted Nugent, various ones that was popular during that time.
Yeah, then you're still in Harlan County.
Yes, in Harlan County, and playing private parties. We did a few little things here and there. And
what were you paid? Or did you just do it for free?
And sometimes we did it for free because we just wanted to be heard of.
Sure.
You know, we was just wanting to be seen. And I come to Western Kentucky, I think I was 17 years old. I played down here a couple years.
Now, what brought you to Western Kentucky?
My mother married a fellow from down here.
Okay, so family brought you here.
Yes, right. Family brought me here. I played for a couple years down here, which gave me a different flavor of rock. And I played at some parties down here, and different people met me and mm-hmm. that were involved in the music business down here, the local musics people, mm-hmm. I guess. And I go back up there, I played some different kinds of music, and I come back down here, and I was in a band called Midnight Owl.
Stop. Okay, so you were with a band, Midnight Owl. Okay.
Midnight Owl was really a turning point, you might say, for me. I met several people that I became good friends with that were original people, which my wife's son, Brent Howard, he played in a high school band, and he later on come into Midnight Owl. There was like two different bands there for a while, but me and the singer stayed in the band. We kept the band together, and we went through two drummers and two guitar players, and eventually Midnight Owl ended up with a bass player, which was Brent Howard, my wife's son. And our drummer was Stuart Clark. Them two played in band together at Ohio County. That's how they met. And then I met them, which I had the rock flavor from the mountains. And wanting to write, and our singer was, he was a good writer. And he knew various people in here that wanted bands to play at mm-hmm. parties and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So me and him got to writing together, and we played other people's music. And then when Midnight Owl split up, I went on my own as a writer. And that brings us up to the future, where I went into, I guess you might say, a semi-professional way of writing.
Now, how old were you at this point?
At this point, see, Midnight Owl split up in 82, so that had been 10 years ago. That would have made me like 33 now. That would make me 21.
Okay, so were you supporting yourself, or were your parents supporting you, or were you working? Was the music supporting you? How were you making your living?
No, at the time I think I was off from work, and then.
And when you say off from work, had you worked some and you were not working?
I wasn't working at that period of
okay.
time.
Okay, that's what I'm getting at. Have you worked all along as you've done your music, or have you just basically focused on your music?
Well, during the time in the past, I had worked some and worked mm-hmm. on music all the time. Music had been in my life all my life.
Music was first and working somewhere else was second.
Yeah,
that's what it sounds like.
Yeah. Well, music, I spent a lot of my life on music.
Well, I can tell that.
A great deal. And what I'm saying by pro songwriting, I started learning stuff about copyrights. Of course, what you had to do to send stuff to Washington and get your copyright registered, and learning more on a professional level. Well, in 1987, I called up a friend of mine, which was the drummer of the group Midnight Owl, and the bass player of Midnight Owl group. The singer had left here, and us as a trio went into a studio in Owensboro, Kentucky, and we recorded Robert Bailey's collection of works.
Mm.
Robert Bailey's collection of works went to several record companies and publishing companies all around the country. And it is still being circulated today.
Now when you say circulated, does that mean to the publishers, or does that mean to different groups that would put it on as a promotional type thing?
To different artists. Right at the present time, I'm not really sending it to that many publishers right at the time. What I have been doing, I've been putting together promo kits with all different types of my music, which consist of folk and the harder rock.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Bailey's collection of work had slow songs on it. It had a jazz song, it was an instrumental mm-hmm. live thing, and it had a hard rock also on there, and it was really my first time in the studio, and us as a group, I really enjoyed it, and I decided that was what I was wanting to do, and I wasn't wanting to do other people's music anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Through this brings me up to the point where Bailey Enterprises is coming in. I made a tape called Robert Bailey Collection of Work, the Bailey's Tape, that was the name of the tape, Bailey, and it was a folk music tape. I made a tape that was called Return of the Night Owl, Robert Bailey's Return of the Night Owl, and to this present time I am working on a hillbilly folk type tape, which is dedicated to my grandfather, Coy Bush. And it is going to be called Robert Bailey's Where Did Our Loving Go? All during this time, I've been meeting various stars and people involved in the record industry, staff writers, other publishers, people with record companies trying to learn more about the recording business and everything to help me put together Bailey Enterprises. I've read a lot of books. I'm also a BMI writer now at this point. At this point, I'm a BMI affiliate as a music publisher. At this point also, this establishment that I have formed, it is for songwriters. The main thing I'm looking at is songwriters that's trying to make it in. On my cards, you will notice, or even on my stationery, you will notice it says Robert Bailey, musician, songwriter, and coordinator. What coordinator means, if I can't help you with my publishing company or something, then I will put your music on file. And these various artists and people that I've come in contact with, if somebody wants to see your music or says, do you know where we could find somebody that does this certain type of music, then I would be willing to show it to them. And the reason I formed that was because I know what it's like as a publisher, or not as a publisher, but as a songwriter, how hard it is to get people to give you attention. And that was one of the reasons why Bailey Enterprises was formed, to help other musicians as well as myself. And add the Bailey name to bring out the heritage that was in the family, of course, with music. And it comes from all different sides of my family, really. But being that I am a Bailey, and Baileys are proud of our heritage, of course, that's why it's called Bailey Enterprises.
The reason I'm chuckling is, on my father's side, they're Irish, staunch Irish, and I'm hearing so many overtones as far as pride and family name. You know, it reminds me of my father's people.
Well, pride does mean a lot to me.
What does it mean to you?
To me, our people, I feel, has made a dent. This is Robert Bailey talking. I feel our people has made a dent as far as the music business goes, and I think we should be heard of for that.
Now, how do you...
And I'm not saying to...
When you're saying they made a dent, are you talking about helping people in life with their life problems? Are you talking about... monetary success? Let's get real specific on what do you mean by
okay.
made a dent.
What I mean by that is I don't want to be considered a conceited type of people. I want that to be known for sure. Right off the top. And I don't want to be considered what people would call music gods. You know, some people, let me explain that. Like, you see in these rock magazines, metal gods, talking about these guitars.
Sure.
I don't want for people to see us like that, because to me, there's only one God, and he's in heaven. And I feel that's where my music is coming from, and what I mean by that is that I feel I'm nothing without his help. Religion means something to me too. That's something that's deep too, and I feel that he has a lot to do with my music career, and I want him to.
It sounds to me like what you're saying in an indirect way is that God blessed you with music, and you can bless other people for through your music. You can minister to them in different ways without just saying, you know, this is God coming through, but that's really what you're doing.
Yes, you might say that. I'm wanting to use the talent that I have been blessed with. And as far as the Bailey family, we have this sense of pride. What I mean by that, and back to what we was talking about a while ago about our dent, we've been playing music to several people, and we've seen them enjoy it. And I hope that continues in the future. And through this, I hope we can help somebody until they will remember that the Baileys did this, and that Bailey Enterprises was one of the things to help.
Well, actually,
help their town.
To me, if you're talking about really ministering to people, music is a universal communication. Mm-hmm. It's in all cultures, and
yes.
Everyone relates to it, whether they're words or not. And so it looks to me like you've got a real big, the task is kind of big in a way, but in another way, it's the most effective way you could help people.
Well, what I'm looking at also, the concept I've got, I tell fellow musicians, even say for instance, I had a fellow musician that was in during around Thanksgiving from North Carolina, and he was a fellow that I had taught several years ago.
Mm.
I had taught to play guitar. He come and played songs that I had taught him several years ago that I had forgotten. He played them to me. And you don't know how that touched me as a teacher,
mm-hmm.
knowing I had taught him. He played songs that I had forgotten myself, which was other people's music. But he also had kept it in him that long.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all done by memory. And he in fact told me, and this was really something that got to me, I guess in an emotional type way, he told me that the times we had, you know, you never would forget.
Well, you were his mentor.
As musicians. And
weren't you?
I'm glad I touched somebody's talent that way, and what I mean, I'm glad I bought the talent out of him.
Sure, I understand that. That's what life's all about.
But music does mean a lot to me, and I think it should be bought out. And Bailey Enterprises was formed. One thing we're going to be doing instrumental type stuff, tapes, and probably instrumental lessons. I myself can play guitar and bass and drums, which I would probably teach some.
Mm-hmm.
And I have various musicians that I've come in contact that is interested in the video instruction tape thing. We may tape some of those. I would also like to teach possibly a class concerning introduction to copyright.
Mm, yes.
Because a lot of people don't even know what it's all about.
Oh, it's complicated, for sure.
They think when you send something off to have it copyrighted, that's one of the favorite sayings of an early musician. I still do it myself. Copyrighted. Really what you're doing, it's copyrighted when you lift the pen from the paper.
Mm-hmm.
It's yours. When you're sending it to Washington, you're just registering it.
Mm-hmm.
You're registering your copyright. People don't know that. People have this misconception, which the poor man copyright can be used. I use both of them.
I was going to get you to explain that. Explain the poor man's copyright for those people who wouldn't know what that means.
Poor man copyright, which means you send it to yourself in the mail. A self-addressed stamped envelope, you send it to yourself in the mail and then you don't open it. Well, what the problem is with that, so many people steamed envelopes and stuff and backdated stuff, and that's also what they did with notaries, you know, paid notaries to backdate stuff.
Well, how does that, I don't understand that. If I, for example, if I sat here and wrote a poem or a note or whatever, music,
uh-huh.
and I would mail it to myself, and I would keep it sealed.
Uh-huh.
Now, who's the person who's gonna open it and change the dates?
Well,
or what do you mean?
Say for instance, I'll put you in a position where you had a song that somebody used of yours.
Okay, I wrote it, they're using it.
Okay, and you hear it,
mm-hmm.
and you know they're using your song.
Mm-hmm.
What will come up in court, if you decide to take it to court, you could get them for infringement.
Mm-hmm.
The one that's supposed to open your package, which has been sealed all this time, and you send it to yourself certified mail. So the date will be on there and everything. Will be the one in court. They will be opening it and looking at it. Okay, see what some people have done. They have steamed envelopes and put songs in there, you know, later than the date that's on there.
So actually, you could come up with two envelopes with two different dates, and then you would have to say, well, which one is the real?
And that's why the poor man copyright was getting to where it wouldn't hold up in court.
I see.
And through sending it to Washington, that helps a lot. And that's one thing that I'm hoping to do with Bailey Enterprises also, is teach something about copyright. And I have read a great deal about it, and I have talked to people, entertainment attorneys, and different people involved with it in publishing and stuff. And I have learned a great deal, and I've got a bunch of pictures of people I've met and stuff, and I try to stay in contact with them. Also,
well, for you to do this much research and this much correspondence, you spend a lot of time in paperwork, sounds like.
Yeah. I also was really, I've been writing for, as some people call, poems, which ends up, you can put music to poems, you know.
Sure.
And make a song out of it, in some cases. Okay, I've been writing stuff probably the biggest part of my life, but I never really decided I could do something with it. As a in musical terms, you understand what I'm saying? Okay, what I'm holding in my hand right now is a thing that I wrote for what's called Gangplank. I worked for Long John Silver's for a while. And this is a magazine that goes out to all the Long John Silvers all across the United States. And our Beaver Dam shop was a flagship shop at the time. A flagship shop meant that you were the highest in, you know, efficiency.
Oh, you're writing.
And there were only like two of them in Kentucky. And we was one of them. And this is what I wrote about. What flagship more or less meant to me. And it ended up in their magazine. And I did stuff like that and wrote stuff, various things like that also. Besides being a writer as a musician too. Writing means a lot to me too, you might say. And that's another thing why Bailey Enterprises is formed also.
For writing as well as music.
It's when I get you a copy of that, you will understand when you read the little thing I put together.
The whole thing.
When you read it, you will know what I'm talking about, and I will send it to you or something.
When you were a child, a young man, did you ever think you'd be taking this direction with your music?
No, I sure didn't, but I guess when I got into the age of maturity, and when I got past the stage of all the hard rocking and stuff, and started getting back to my roots of folk music, which I first started noticing it, I think it was in 1988, when I started wanting to get back. And what I mean by wanting to get back, Kentucky, what I'd heard as a child growing up, I wanted to sing about some of the things I had seen, which this new tape has a lot about Kentucky. It has a lot about various things concerning, in fact, I've got a song about a Civil War battle on one of it, which is about, it happened in Tennessee, but it involves an officer from Kentucky. And various things that I had felt, I had seen, and everything I'm wanting to bring back out. I'm still doing rock music, and it's still being heard. And what I'm saying by that, people, the best thing had been said about my rock music. I had sent some to the Kentucky Headhunters, which is an upbeat band.
I've heard them once or twice. Yeah, they are upbeat. You are right.
They're very upbeat. And I really got a good response, and I was so shocked. You know, a professional band responding to my music like that, because they had won so many awards at CMA, and I think their first album went triple platinum or something.
My goodness, I didn't realize they had that kind of record. I don't know that much about them, though.
They had a great reputation when they come in. It really stunned me to get the reaction. And I went to a town called Munfordsville.
Yeah, I've been there.
And seen their festival.
They had a festival at Munfordsville.
It was called the, I think it was the Chitlin Festival or something to that effect. Anyway, the manager gave me some backstage passes. Me and my sister and my brother-in-law went. And I had met Greg Martin, which is their lead guitar player, earlier that day and talked to him. But the road manager, when he started talking to me, which he had called me about my music and told me that he really liked it and all this stuff and was bragging on it, and I really couldn't believe it. I was stunned. And he says, "Oh, Greg's wanting to meet you. He's the lead guitar player for the Kentucky Headhunters." And he was telling me how he liked it and comparing me with different people. I think he compared me to Lou Reed and various ones. And I was centering my mouth open. I couldn't believe I was hearing this, you know. This is the autograph he gave me anyway. Rock on, Hillbilly.
That's funny. Rock on, Hillbilly.
And Kentucky Headhunters said, "Tuck that tape." They went to a award show in California, and they had tucked the tape and let the lady, I think he said the record company was Carmelo Records, listen to it. And she really liked it, and she thought there was some potential in it. So I've been keeping my rock out there to keep it circulating. But I guess my heart's in the folk. It's in Kentucky, and the new tape will be about Kentucky.
Well, let me ask you this. I can tell that religion is a big part of your whole life. Has it always been, or were you sort of a rebel? Were you brought up in the tradition?
Biggest part of my life, yes.
So it wasn't like you had turned away from it and then came right back?
I went through, I ain't going to say that I didn't do things that most teenagers do.
Sure,
getting out and drinking and stuff like that. Most teenagers have to try that stuff and everything. But what I am going to say, that religion never left me. And it always has meant something to me. And I still feel to this day that the talent I have, that what I have, my business, clothes I wear, everything comes from the Lord. And I thank Him for it.
I believe that about myself.
On a daily basis. And you will read in my preface what I have to say about that and in my music. And the Lord means a great deal to me. I don't live a life of a saint. I'm not going to say that. And I don't live what I would call a Christian life. But I am a believer. And I believe that the Lord is taking care of me and my music. And I believe He has blessed me with a talent that I should use.
Are you affiliated with a particular church?
No.
Were you brought up in a...
I've never been really denominational.
Were you brought up in a denomination as a child?
Oh, I've been to various churches. Holiness, Baptist, I've even been to snake handling churches in the mountains.
Did the music of the church influence you a lot, Robert?
Yes. There's one lady in particular from Eastern Kentucky that had a great impact on me. Her name was Ellen Turner, and she's a great musician.
Now, was Miss Turner, was she more with the Pentecostal movement, or was she more conservative?
Church of God.
Church of God. Were they snake handlers?
No, not the church that she was at. And in fact, she sung at my mom's funeral a couple years ago.
And what sort of instrument did she play, or was she vocal?
She plays guitar, and I think she plays piano also. And she has a great voice. She is one of the people, I guess, that touched my music. Yes, you might say, I always remember.
Mm-hmm.
Remember back to her as far as gospel music goes. She's somebody that I never will forget.
So her influence and her influence being gospel really gave you a background or added to the background. You already had the background from your family. But would you say that next to your family she would come right in there as second of influence?
Yeah, she added a... She was an influence.
She kind of put the icing on the cake. Would you say that?
I can't say what really put the icing on the cake. I can say, though, she was one of the influences. To me, I don't think that you really ever put the icing on the cake. Because I feel a man never learns all he needs to learn.
That's for sure.
And... me, as a musician now, I'm more creative and I'm more into original music than I am other people's music at this time, and I have been for about the past 5 years. I play other people's music from time to time, but it don't interest me anymore. You know, somebody wants to hear something sometime. If I can remember it, I'll play it for them, but to as far as meaning something to me, I can't really bring out the feeling, because me as a musician, I have to feel what I play.
That's the artist in you.
I really come out with it. I mean, some people probably think I'm crazy by the way I act, but I have to feel what I am playing, and there has to be some kind of art to it.
Oh, for sure. For sure, with all the creativity going on in you.
And I put things... well, Kentucky Headhunters road manager said he couldn't... he said various things about it. He didn't know how I did all that.
Oh.
And the drummer told me, he said that there was a lot of... His words was something to the effect that... there was a lot of good stuff on that tape that they had heard. And of course, the lead guitar player liked it, and the rhythm player.
Sure.
And I've sent stuff to various artists still in at this time.
So this is going to be an ongoing process for you?
Oh, yes. And hopefully the company that I am forming will help not only me, but to everybody else to see the true meaning of music. And what it's all about, and what I don't claim to know it all by no means, because I don't think I'd even skim the ground as far as I'm concerned. I've did a lot of reading, and the reason why I like meeting a lot of these artists, you've probably seen me in the paper and pictures with different artists and stuff. You learn from them, the hands-on, what they have learned hands-on, and what you can't find in a book.
That's true.
And I've read several books concerning it, but I've learned a lot of hands-on stuff too, and I'm hoping to help other people through the experience that I have learned also. And I hope Bailey Enterprises will turn out to be company to do just that.
Well, I think you're off to a good start.
And I hope this interview hasn't been a mind-boggler.
No, not at all. It's been enjoyable.
Really, I've enjoyed it a great deal. I've enjoyed just filling somebody out of field because, you know, a lot of people don't really understand where I'm coming from enough. They probably think I'm just a crazy country boy with a wild dream. I may be, but I won't know that I can't make it until I try. In other words, I've told people, even I may fall on my face, but I won't know until I try.
That's true.
And
it's kind of like me with my writing. And if I do fall and I don't make it, as far as the world's concerned, I really don't care because I'm expressing myself.
That's right. That's what it's all about.
That's what it really all
Creativity is what it all means.
Mm-hmm. And comfort. I always like to think that what I'm doing is helping someone else. So that's
enjoyment.
A big part of it. Mm-hmm. Big part of it.
Self-fulfilled.
I can't believe we came out so well. Look, that's the end of the tape.